This podcast is sponsored by Finomatch, finding the most suitable donor with the matching tool for the best teams.
Hello, and welcome to the Fertility Conversations podcast. The goal of this podcast is to create more awareness about infertility and to provide support to people trying to conceive. Thank you for listening today, and we hope you will be encouraged. And now, here is your host, Ola.
Welcome to another episode of the Fertility Conversations. Today, we are joined by a lovely guest, Dr. Elizabeth Amoah. She's the author of The Unspoken Identity, a book that can be found in over 500 libraries around the world. She founded the foundation Special Lady Awareness in 2017 in a bid to raise awareness on reproductive health disorders and to encourage women to seek early medical intervention in order to prevent unnecessary surgeries and complications. Dr. Elizabeth was born with two wombs, two cervixes, and two vaginal canals, and wrote her book to narrate her journey of discovering her rare congenital abnormality and the medical complications she experienced. She joins us today to share her journey and to tell us about her book and a special foundation. So welcome, Dr. Elizabeth, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me today. And such an amazing introduction. Yes, my name is Elizabeth, Dr. Elizabeth Amoah. I'm still not using the doctor. Yes, I have to continue using it. And yes, I am the founder of Special Lady Awareness and also the author of The Unspoken Identity, as you said. And I call myself the Special Lady just because of obviously the rare congenital abnormality that I have, and also a woman that believes that our medical condition do not define us in our journey. There is a purpose for us to have certain journey or certain experiences. So this is a little introduction that I can give.
Yay. Thank you so much for being here today. And I'll have your book. Yay. Well done. So to start off, we just wanted to ask you, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do for fun.
Mostly what I do is I do a lot of research. So for me, my fun is a lot of research, reading online or searching articles. The reason be because of my journey. And I want to still understand why I'm born different. You know, what actually happened, what went wrong, because there is not a lot of health or I say medical research out there. So most of my time is reading online, researching on science websites, health websites, you know, Googling things and trying to understand who I am, trying to not understand only the malformation of my womb, but also endometriosis, because obviously I have endometriosis stage 4, which is bowel endometriosis. I have uterine fibroids, I have adhesions, and also secondary infertility. So for me, a lot of the research are always around these kind of conditions and how I can manage the symptoms, because after all the surgeries that I've had, I haven't had any cure, and the symptoms used to be worse compared to now. So for me, a lot of my research and my hobby is doing those things and ensuring that I get the right management and how to live with these conditions. Aside that, I'm a mother. I have a daughter by God's grace, who is a teenager. She just turned a teenager. So handful. I love to mentor and coach young people, so mostly youth and also some young adults. And what else can I say? And also, I'm so passionate about my advocacy work, especially the awareness. You know, that's my second baby. That's my daughter. And yeah, so I'm married to a military man. And what else can I say?
Thank him for his service.
Yes, he's in service. He loves service. And obviously, what else can I say about me? I think just ask questions, because if I start to talk, I don't think we're going to open it.
We're going to be here all day. Well, that's good. You know, I love the fact that you're so passionate about what you do and raising awareness. We need more education, really, because oftentimes people don't even know about this. Sometimes people are experiencing something similar and they're living in silence because they don't think anyone else is dealing with the same thing. They think they're alone. So all your advocacy work in creating awareness and educating people is definitely really helpful and so welcomed. So thank you for all that you do.
Thank you.
I mean, you mentioned a whole lot of things that impact fertility that you've highlighted. So I wonder if you want to share perhaps your own journey to motherhood and perhaps if there was any impact on either of your conditions that on your fertility journey.
So for me, I remember in 2008, I was diagnosed with primary infertility. So I was told conceiving was going to be very difficult. Perhaps I would have never have a child. That's what they said, because they diagnosed me with multiple fibroids. Right. And it wasn't one. I think it was about 6 or 8, if I remember.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember 8. By that time, it was 6 or 8. Can't remember exact numbers. And it wasn't something that I was quite concerned. I was still young. I was at university. And I was studying law. So I thought, oh, this is just a list in my mind. I'm not interested in having babies yet. But then again, I stopped using contraception. I then also tried to cut down certain lifestyle, like stop drinking and stop eating red meat at that time, cut down my sugar, stop eating sugar. So although I wasn't ready for the baby, but I was trying to kind of be healthy so that the fibroids wouldn't grow, because these things actually help the fibroids to kind of shrink or kind of just stay steady, don't grow. And just after 18 months or so, I got pregnant. Unexpectedly. And I remember it was quite a shock, because that time no one knew I had two wombs. When I got pregnant, they didn't believe it was pregnancy, obviously. Most of the scan was not showing the baby. They thought it was the type of pregnancy, pushing me to have abortions. But I heard on my faith. So my pregnancy was quite unusual. I was bleeding throughout my pregnancy. Obviously, it came to why, you know, later. I have that unusual condition. But I had about 15, 20 scans during my pregnancy, though, and still nothing was diagnosed. And when I say nothing, apart from the fibroids. So my motherhood was not the greatest fun, although it was a shock, but there was a lot of psychological effects. The fact of seeing blood every month, I'll rush to the hospital, and they still couldn't tell me what was wrong. At that time, I was studying my master's, and it was master's, you know, of laws, so LLM. So some way, somehow, my focus was more my education, as always. I wasn't very concerned with the pregnancy. I just thought, you know what, just whatever will happen, but I wasn't going to have an abortion. I heard on my feet. She was born premature, 7 months, and it wasn't an easy journey. Afterwards, I could not conceive again. So it was, that was part of the reason why that I started to persist to get answers to why I wasn't having any more child. And I was exhibiting a lot of symptoms like heavy bleeding, irregular menstrual periods, and also quite feeling fainting, tired. Initially, they were ruling me down to postnatal depression. She turned 4 years and the same symptoms got worse and worse. And that was when I then started to seek more answers, and they discovered that I have obviously an unusual condition called the uterine deficit, which is having two womb tissue services, two vagina canals, also stage 4 endometriosis and adhesion. So that also put me through to, I would say, a more serious secondary infertility. Although I was still able to get pregnant again second time, unfortunately, I experienced something called silent miscarriage or mixed miscarriage or mixed abortion. So the fetus died when it was only 2 months, and I carried it for another 2 months, which I didn't know. So since then, it's okay. Since then, I haven't conceived. The last time I checked, they said I can't conceive without help. It's not happening. And I haven't tried really deeper. I mean, I don't use protection, obviously, with my husband. But then again, it can happen, yes, because I've been able to conceive twice. But for me, the chances of me carrying it to full term is also another issue because of all the complications I have. So for me, conceiving, sometimes I'm just not interested because I'm scared that if I get pregnant, what if I have a silent miscarriage, or I have a stillbirth, which obviously having you told the officers, you are high risk of miscarriages, stillbirth, and premature delivery. So the question is, do I want to put my body back to where I was when I had a premature child? It wasn't easy. She being incubator while I was going through health-wise. So all those are part of the reason why sometimes I feel like it's still a blessing that God hasn't given me a chance to conceive. So that's my journey of infertility. I know it doesn't sound very glamorous, but unfortunately, it is what it is.
Yeah. Wow. That's so much to have to have had to deal with all of that. And even the fact that they didn't even think you're pregnant. Mm-hmm. And going back and forth and doing several scans and still being told, it must have been so much. And when did they finally realize that you were actually pregnant?
I think I was about 3.5 to 4 months.
Wow.
That's when they saw the baby. Because the blood test was, so the scan wasn't showing the baby. The urine test was showing I was pregnant. And blood test was saying I was pregnant. But when they scanned, they couldn't locate the baby. So they were thinking it was a ectopic pregnancy. But Today, standing here, it was because they were scanning the wrong womb. My daughter was in my right womb. Wow. And I'm sure they were scanning the left womb. So about 3.5, 4 months, that time, obviously, the baby, the pregnancy was grown. So they were able to locate the right womb. So they were then scanning the right womb, which is me.
That must have been so scary, though, because you think about what if you had gone ahead and taken the pills or any whatever they wanted to do for the to treat the, because it was 11 pregnancy of unknown location, right? That's what we're thinking. And you know, if you had gone ahead and had that medical intervention and to think, wow,
today so I would have done that with regrets.
Yeah.
100%. I always say that, and I remember I tried to ask questions when my daughter was born at one point. I said, why did you guys were pushing me to have an abortion? But she was there. And no one was able to answer me. But then looking at my, you know, malformation, it's not because they knew it and they wanted me to terminate the baby. It's a condition that can be hidden. Some people are blessed to have a very experienced radiologist that can diagnose them early. But there are some that come with it. Because even in my case, the MRI only showed two wounds. It was through keyhole surgery and also the one that they go through the vagina. I forgot the name. That's when they diagnosed me with two cervices and two vagina canals and even the endometriosis. That makes sense. So
like a hysteroscopy or something.
Yeah, that's it. That's when they diagnosed me with the two cervices, two vagina canals, and also the stage four endometriosis. So my case is still quite complicated. I don't know why. Maybe because I have the complete malformation, and because also I have very severe endometriosis with adhesions. And to me, it's because they left me for a very long time. Then neglect went on for many years because I started exhibiting these symptoms way back in Africa when I was 6 years old. Went to France at the age of 12, 13 years old. And obviously, the unspoken identities talk about, you know, my journey. And when you read a book, obviously, you've read it, you'll be like, hang on. Why didn't the doctors take precaution? Why didn't they do the right thing? And this is why I wrote the book. Because I wrote it not only because of my experience, it's also to, you know, shed light on some things and some kind of signs that doctors keep ignoring, because it was there. I asked questions. I pleaded. My concern was raised many, many times. No one was listening to me. They thought I was making it up. They thought I was crazy. You know, trying to give me antidepressant and trying to say you are not, you know, okay in the head. Yes, it's true with, you know, having a premature baby and all that, but it was not just postnatal depression. It was more to it. And today we go back and realize that there was something wrong. And why didn't you find what was wrong with it?
Well done on advocating for yourself and pushing for more investigations, because that was what made the difference, right? For them to eventually diagnose your condition and even the endometriosis and to see what was actually happening. Because oftentimes, if you get that kind of pushback from the doctors, you can start to question and doubt yourself that perhaps they're right. Mm-hmm. Maybe there is something, you know, wrong with me, or perhaps maybe there's really nothing there. I should just you know, stop going there and pushing. So well done on pushing, and now for advocating for others to advocate for themselves and raising awareness, and for writing your book as well. It's so important that people see others have experienced something similar, or that other people that have pushed and advocated for themselves, because it gives you the strength to be able to say, okay, all right, perhaps I can ask more questions, perhaps I can ask for more investigations to be done. So thank you for all of that. And now when they did find out that you had two uteruses, two cervix, two vaginal canals, how was that, finding that out?
I mean, it was a shock to me when it was found out, and it wasn't a straightforward, like, have an MRI. As I said, it wasn't just that. I had MRI. It still wasn't enough. I had to have a keyhole surgery. The first keyhole surgery was unsuccessful, although they did cut me. So I had to wait for another month, go back again in the theater room for a second one. And it has to be done by a specialist because of the complications. And it was a shock. But at the same time, it was also answers to what has been happening since childhood. So it was like, oh, I wasn't making it up. You know, this is real. Like, hey, I wasn't lying. I wasn't crazy. And this is there. It was like, okay, this is strange. This is just not the usual thing I've ever heard. But then I was given the leaflets, and I was told I can research about it. And I everything just sum up that it was the right thing. They were saying the right thing. It was in Germany anyway. And I had the opportunity to have these treatments and diagnosis through the British Army, which I'm so grateful for them. You know, it's the reason why I'm so proud that my husband is still serving. So yeah, it was a very exciting and also unusual and a kind of a new beginning for me. It was like a rebirth. It was a moment I realized that all these years, you know, at my 32 or 33 years, I wasn't born. Now I am born. I'm born again, you know. And I wasn't ready to come out publicly, obviously. I just wanted to still deal with it. I obviously told my family first, and because they were so worried from childhood, sometimes they thought I was sickle cell carrier, they thought I had all sorts of condition because I've always been ill since childhood. So it kind of then made them pressure that, oh, she doesn't have sickle cells, because I've done so many tests for sickle cells and all sorts, and nothing was coming up. So they were like, oh, okay, you don't have sickle cells, you don't have this, you don't have that, you don't have cancer, you don't have that. So this is
what is it like?
And I thought, yeah. And I was also then in the process of going to get help to have a second baby, so mild fertility treatment. So that was my focus, which was successful. But unfortunately, that's when I said I experienced a silent miscarriage. So that mild fertility treatment did not also help. And afterwards, I decided to come out because the journey, I thought, I have had enough. And I also thought I was given a second chance to be alive, because I carried a dead fetus for 2 months. I could have died, you know.
Yeah, the infection. You could have had an infection that could have spread. Yeah.
So I then realized that, you know what, come out, tell your story, don't hide anymore. You don't know what tomorrow holds. And obviously, having all these kind of complications, especially with the offices, you know, I kind of have kidney diseases, I'm kind of high risk to kidney diseases, and so all sorts. So I thought, let me come out and tell my story. And today we're here, I have other conditions. I recently got diagnosed with diabetes on top. So it's like, it doesn't end, you know, having all this complications. My immune system is very compromised. So if for me, if I didn't come out, who knows, I would have been gone. And coming out has helped me strong. It has given me hope. You know, the fact that you wake up and you know millions of women, not just thousands, because my story is in over 150 or probably more countries, my book in over 500 libraries in the world. You know, thinking about all these, that give me the hope and faith and strong, like the strength to carry on. And, you know, I'm so grateful for everyone that has, you know, encouraged me, supported me, including yourself, giving me the platform to talk about, you know, my journey and inspire others. That is awesome. It's, you know, I don't know how to explain.
Thank you so much. I mean, thank you for choosing to share. I mean, that's amazing, because you know that this is such a taboo. I mean, fertility, anything that has to do with fertility is taboo subject, but having unique female, you know, part of your reproductive system being unique, right? And so telling anybody, I think across the globe, they'll probably, you know, ask again, like, seriously, what did he say? But especially in different African countries, like, to say that, to come out and publicly say that you have two vagina canals, they have two services, two uteruses, and that must have been taken a lot. Because, I mean, didn't your family say, maybe not, let's keep this on the down low? Let's not. Like, we're glad it's all sorted now, but there's no need.
Especially when the backlash, the negativity starts. You were like, no, stop talking, please. It's not right. What we're reading online, people are bashing you. The insults are too much. And I'm like, you know, I'm stubborn. I'm a Leo.
And that's it. There's always a lot of pushback for speaking out for what's right. I don't understand. Yeah. I think maybe perhaps because we're just used to having things a certain way.
It's a culture.
Yeah.
It's the culture. And it's like, I think is, I was telling someone yesterday about it. It's more like there was no safe environment. People don't feel safe. There are people that really want to come out in Africa and talk about the unspoken things that we don't talk about. But the thing is that the awareness is not there. The safe environment is not there. They feel they will be judged. They feel people will laugh, you know, and people will laugh at you. People will judge you. People will talk. But you just look at the bright side, the amount of people and lives you touching. That's what matters. And for me, that's what I focus on. The fact that I'm encouraging others to speak up, you know, get early diagnosis. The fact that people can help themselves save their life, not undergoing unnecessary surgeries. Because I have had 6 surgeries. There are some women that have had 10, 7, 8. Some people, they're not lucky. They go 1 or 2, they die out of it. You know, some people, they never recover the complications. And some of us, we've been fortunate that we use a lot of, you know, herbal remedies in terms of, let's say, drinking green tea, ginger tea, and all sorts, you know, to maintain the scars, you know, the sores when you have all these surgeries. And, you know, it still hasn't been easy. There has been sometimes I switch from, you know, supplements to supplements. I try CBD oil. I try CBD tea. And they're very expensive. I don't eat red meat. I have to eat certain kind of food. Sometimes you feel like, you know, you've got nausea, all these kind of things. And you still have to find ways of adding ginger to all your food you eat, eating a lot of greens, eating this, drinking this, not drinking. It's too much. But if we don't talk, if we don't build that kind of safe environment, how can someone also learn from it and also manage their symptoms or any other complications they're going through, or even their own personal life, family goals, especially after COVID? We've all seen a lot of people are still suffering mentally, you know, because of what we went through. This is why that taboo thing and stereotype and labeling, it's about time. We need to stop.
Yeah, definitely. So well said. Thank you. Thank you for choosing to speak out in spite of the pressure to not speak out. Thank you. So in writing your book now, you choosing to write that. Of course, I know, like you said, you wanted to advocate, you wanted to raise awareness. Was that why you went ahead and wrote the book then?
So the unspoken identity one was obviously to tell my story, to let people know. Because for me, all the opportunities I've had, the interviews, which we all know I've had, I've done hundreds of them. I felt like the platform wasn't enough. To me, I felt like people still do not understand me, or they don't get why I came out to tell my story. Because I felt like a lot of people were focusing on, she've got 2 vaginas, but then they don't understand what uterine deficit is. They don't understand the complications. They don't understand what it entails. Yes, don't get me wrong, the pleasure part of it. Oh yeah, she got 2 holes. You know, that one it's there. You know, people can fantasize wherever they want to fantasize.
Yeah.
But it's not a joke. It's complicated.
Exactly.
I mean, living with it, it's not a joke, because you become high risk to other reproductive disorders. Mm-hmm. And also you become more high risk to infertility. So all this was that, okay, put them in a book, put a journey, let people know that this is what you went through. And also let people know that, yes, leave a legacy. You were the first Black woman to come out globally, you know, to tell your story.
Well done.
You know, being an African, being Ghanaian, being an Ashanti, obviously, so why I've got the boldness in me. So I thought, okay, let me live that legacy. Let me make my motherland, which Ghana we call, proud. Let me make my roots, my heritage proud. Let people know that, yes, you were an African Ghanaian woman that came out first ever to talk about the unspoken. You know, so this is why I put them in a book. And I'm so grateful, thinking that today Oxford University have access to the book, Cambridge University have access to the book, Physical Archives, British Library, which America, all of, I don't even know all of them, so many libraries in the world, including library, Ghana Library Authorities, America
in is almost Canada.
In Canada, yes, Australia, that one, Germany, Italy, name them, you know, a lot of universities, a lot of libraries across the globe, in Japan, almost everywhere. As soon as you Google the unspoken identity, the woman with two vaginas, or just unspoken identity, it will come up. And for me, this is what I wanted to leave. I wanted people to hear the story. I wanted people to learn. And I also wanted the scientists, which is now that's my move now. I want them to do more research on it. This is why I'm pleading with scientists out there, medical professionals, that I'm pleading for them to do more research on this condition. Because I feel like there was not enough research. People just don't understand. I've met a lot, countless of medical professionals, doctors that they've never heard about my condition. They don't even know. So imagine I'll go and sit in the local, which is GP, you know, our local surgery. And then you ask the person, oh, I've got a deficit. What is that? What does it entail? They don't. And it's not your fault. And you're thinking, as a health professional, you are in a GP, you know, GP is a general thing, at least have a little bit of an idea that there are women that have different womb. So when I come to you today and said, oh, I've got urinary infection, and next week I come back, I've got urinary infection, then you should understand that, oh, someone with this kind of condition tend to have a lot of urinary infection. Therefore, the third, fourth urinary infection, let me send that person off to do kidney test. Because if I'm not careful, she might get kidney diseases. Because the doctors will not know, they will just be giving antibiotics for how long? So these are the reasons why I feel like a lot of research needs to be done, so that they will know people like me tend to have a lot of infections. They tend to have a lot of other conditions that it can be complicated. I have diabetes. And I remember when I got diagnosed, I asked the doctor, why did I get diabetes? And he was like, oh, diabetes is, you know, I'm one African. I said, no, my family, no one have diabetes. So it's not in my family. Why did I have diabetes? Oh, your immune system. I said, what caused it? Okay, hang on. I have endometriosis, stage 4, bowel endometriosis. I have endometriosis deficit. My immune system is very compromised. Is it because of that? Oh, I don't know. You know, I'm like, you see, that alone, but for me, it's because of that. My immune system is so compromised. Maybe I'm not, you know, my system is not working properly, because I've had a lot of symptoms. Sometimes I do have, I've got chronic pain, and all of a sudden I started having acute pain as well, back pain, waist pain. Sometimes it goes and it come back, it come very severe. So all the time there was something wrong somewhere. But I wish I would have a medical professional to tell me that this is the reason. So all this is what kind of motivated me to write my first book, which my second book too is coming, which is the
That's great. We need that information. People need that education to be aware, because again, very important. Because some, if you read your book now, and then some, you know, somewhere along the line, you come across someone that says they have to uterus or to cervix, you understand that, yes, that is possible. Mm-hmm. I've read a book, you know, about someone that did this, that had the same, or, you know, you have a niece or nephew, niece or daughter, or whoever mm-hmm. the case you come across, you'll be able to be aware and to be able to provide support and, you know, direct them to the proper place to seek mm-hmm. more help. So that's really important. How can people get the book? I mean, I got mine on Amazon. Yay. Where can people get it apart from Amazon? Are there other places, perhaps in Ghana?
Everywhere. eBay, Barnes & Nobles, Blackwell, what else? Aston Macaulay, in the UK, WH Smith, in America, Walmart, Target.
So amazing. Everywhere.
Everywhere.
if you don't have access to Amazon and any of the other places that she's highlighted, please just Google it.
Will come wherever up. Country you are, as I said, in Japan you can buy, in India you can buy, in Saudi. So a lot of bookshops, private bookshops, sell them as well. They are also amazing. In local libraries. You can always access them online and read them online. Sign up so you can also read online, but try and buy it is better so that you can
you can have your copy.
You know, the more you buy, you know, you support our NGO some way, somehow.
Yes. And then your NGO, Special Lady Awareness. What was the inspiration behind starting that in Ghana?
So the inspiration was to come out and tell my story and also use the platform to educate. So it was more to educate people and raise awareness on reproductive health. I would say promote reproductive health rights among women and young girls, and also combat menstrual poverty, because obviously menstrual poverty is one of the things that affect a lot of Africans, and it's all kind of linked to reproductive health, I would say education. So it was founded in 2017. It all started with just an Instagram post thinking, oh, let me come out there, let me just tell my story. And then next I know, you know, it's gone so far. And, you know, it got registered and it's now seen as an NGO and also recognized by Ghana Social Welfare. So it's kind of a huge project now. Every year, we try to impact over 3,000 to 5,000 lives. At the moment, we've impacted over 25,000 young girls.
Amazing.
If we add
well universities,
thank you. Out of our 30 educational establishments, which is universities and secondary schools. So, it's a lot. We literally just came back. I mean, I came back by the team master with the volunteers are in Ghana. The team came back from Ghana, where we also visited Volta region and also Ashanti region. And we do community outreach. So we do workshops, seminars, and conferences to raise awareness on this reproductive health. And obviously also do donations of sanitary products. So we just don't go and talk, we give parts, sanitary products. And we also give medical equipment. So so far we've donated to 5 healthcare units in Ghana, over $130,000 worth of medical equipment.
Amazing.
On top of my mind, because so quite a lot of donations. And so the sanitary products, all the 25,000 girls, they've received sanitary pads. So each, so I'll say about that numbers. And including the women, I haven't added the women in the communities, which we try. This time in the Volta region, we donated to 400 women. So so each time we also take some women and also donate aside the students. So we pray to God that we'll be able to cover the whole Ghana region. We've done Eastern region, we've done Central, we've done Ashanti, we've done Volta region. So we still have quite a few. We've got 16 regions, so quite a few to go. Well, a lot of funding is needed, and we want to cross over, not just Ghana, we want to go to Nigeria, South Africa, because all those countries, you can get my book, you can get my story. Malawi, they've all published my story. Kenya, especially, they've published my story on TV and radio. So all those countries, I think it's about time I start to think of going there and also impacting the lives, not just they reading my book or reading my story online, because I'm sure some of them think I'm not real. Although they love me.
I know.
A lot on Facebook and all the media platforms, you see them sending message request. Oh, are you real? I want to meet you. So I think it would be good to try and cross, you know, the border of Ghana.
Well done. What a legacy
Thank you. Leaving
and actually building while you're here. That is so many, 25,000 people, lives in Ghana. That's, you know, all with families. So all those 25,000, you've impacted them, you've impacted their families, you've impacted other people that are connected within the community. So that's really amazing that all that you've done. And of course, you know, planning to do to have further reach to other parts of Africa. Thank you for all that you're doing. And you'll notice that you donate free pads, like you said, and medical equipment. How can people support you and your foundation?
So they can, we've got websites, which is www.speciallady.awareness.com. There was a link to our GoFundMe page. There was also our bank account details, which is the NGO account. You can always get in touch on our Instagram, which is at speciallady.awareness. And all one word, so at Special Lady Awareness, all one word. On Facebook, it's Special Lady, one word, then space awareness, or Special Lady Awareness. On our YouTube, they can also see some of the videos of some of our work, which is Special Lady Awareness. So all these platforms, people can get in touch. And as I said, the bank details and the GoFundMe link is on our website. So
wonderful. Thank you. I'll put all the links in the show notes as well so people can reach out to you and support you and be part of this change and movement across the globe. Thank you so much.
Thank you. With
all your journey, all that you've been through, how do you think that has changed you as a person?
For me, it has given me a sense of fulfillment. I feel more fulfilled, you know, than before. I feel like I have a purpose now. I feel like I'm not just living, you know, I just don't get up and feel like, oh, okay, it's tonight, no, the next day. I feel like I was brought on this earth for a reason. I was given this condition for a reason, and I was chosen to be the voice for many. Although, you know, that to get to where I am, I had to go through a lot. I had to feel it physically, mentally, emotionally. It hasn't been easy. You know, trust me, there are some times you cry, you question yourself, especially when you're in pain. And you question, why are you going through this? When you get diagnosis, like when I got my diabetes diagnosis recently, I was like, what again? What's going on? And I have to start my medication straight away. But then again, I still feel like there is a reason for this. There was a purpose. There was another purpose. Maybe not just being a reproductive health advocate. Maybe, who knows, also channel your education in diabetes as well, because it affects a lot of Black people as well, and Asians, you know. So maybe something that you need to talk about. Mm-hmm. And also not only just Black or Asians, also some white people do have it. It's a condition that if you don't take early steps or management, it can affect you. You can lose your sight. Some, they have to get their legs amputated and all that. So it's also another thing, maybe God wanting you to, you know, have a bit of an education and a bit of an experience. I'm still new to it. I'm still learning, you know, about diabetes and all that. But to me, I still feel the same. I still, you know, try and incorporate a lot of exercise and eat well. But for me, everything or every steps that I've taken, I've been through, I do not regret. Mm. It came for a purpose. And as, you know, the saying goes, I think it was Oprah that said, turn your wounds into wisdom. Use your pain, your trauma, your challenges, you know, to impact the world, to educate others, to inspire others. And that's what I'm doing, just turning every wound I've been through, I've had, or I've experienced, every trauma, every pain, so that one day when I get called, someone will just look back and say, hey, she gave us the platform, she gave us the voice, she gave us the faith. She made us realize that our condition do not define us. We should keep striving. So that's what I can say.
Well done, Dr. Amoa. That was amazing. Thank you so much for all that you've shared today with us. Thank you for being so vocal, for choosing to share your story and your condition, knowing fully well, as you've said, you received some backlash and that there will be some people that would not be happy with you coming out to speak. But in spite of all that, in spite of the stigma, in spite of it being taboo to speak about things like this, you forged ahead and wrote your book and still writing another book and started your foundation to raise more awareness, to support more people. You're such a blessing. Thank you for all that you're doing. Thank you for all that you've been doing and what you're yet to do. Thank you for teaching young girls and many of us across the globe the importance of advocating for yourself. That is so important because many times people back down because, again, a doctor or someone might tell you, well, it's in your head, it's not reality. Mm-hmm. But you're teaching young girls today that if you're feeling something, keep pushing, keep checking, get a second opinion, get a third opinion, keep seeking until you feel heard and you feel seen. Mm-hmm. And someone goes ahead and helps you to investigate further.
Definitely.
Thank you for teaching us that and teaching people across the globe. You're such an inspiration. Thank you for, you know, making the time to come out here today to have this conversation with us. I know that you're pretty busy. So for making the time to come on today, thank you for all that you're doing. And we'll definitely be supporting your foundation and putting all the details in the show notes so that people can reach out to you and support and help you reach more people across the globe. And we look forward to having you again in the near future.
Definitely. I'm so like touched. Thank you for the kind words. You know, it feels so good and amazing to realize that, you know, people genuinely appreciate, you know, the little thing I'm doing, the little change that I feel like I'm doing. So thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you so much for this platform. And I know a lot of people will learn from it. And as you said, they shouldn't keep quiet. They should speak, 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 speak till you get the right answers, till you feel fulfilled, till you feel like, hey, now I have answers and I'm not making it up.
Exactly. Well said. Thank you so much, Dr. Elizabeth Amoa. And we look forward to having you again in the near future.
Thank you very much, Ola. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Fertility Conversations podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at Fertility Conversations. If there are any topics you would like to have discussed, please send an email to fertilityconversations@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. Thank you again for listening. Take care of yourself and do stay hopeful.